there are two types of small business owners. Those who are already profiting from the power of social media, building stronger, more powerful relationships with their customers and prospects. And those who are still sitting on the sidelines, wondering if it will work for them too. If you're still sitting on the sidelines, then No Hassle Social Media is for you. Finally, there's a fast and easy done-for-you way to use social media marketing to connect with more customers and prospects, accelerating the know, like, and trust factor, all with no experience necessary. No Hassle Social Media not only shows you exactly what to do, it provides you with a ton of great content that you can use to promote your business and build stronger relationships with clients and potential clients. You get blog posts, Twitter tweets, Facebook posts, LinkedIn updates, and even video scripts. Get started profiting from social media today at www.nohasslesocialmedia.com. That's www.nohasslesocialmedia.com.
This is John Taffer from Bar Rescue, and you're listening to Stick Like Glue Radio.
Welcome to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Marketing and business building expert Jim Palmer, known internationally as the Newsletter Guru, is a serial entrepreneur, author, speaker, and coach to other entrepreneurs. Jim is the host of Newsletter Guru TV, a weekly web TV show featuring Jim's unique brand of smart marketing and business building advice. Check it out today at www.newsletterguru.tv. Please welcome your host of Stick Like Glue Radio, Jim Palmer.
Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome to Stick Like Glue Radio. This is the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. And those are all great things in your business. I am your host, Jim Palmer. I'm committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. This week, we're in for a really great treat. My special guests are Hannah and Mark Lim, who appeared on Shark Tank for their really cool invention called the Lala Cup. Now, Mark and Hannah are the founders of Lala Land, a company that designs and creates sippy cups for babies. As I said, they appeared on Shark Tank in season 3 and received an investment from Mark and Robert, which is pretty cool. So, Mark and Hannah, thank you so much for being my special guests this week on Stick Like Glue Radio.
Jim, thanks for having us. We're happy to be on with you.
Awesome.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you. We're excited.
It's cool. Hey, so, I'm really excited to talk to you because I know the entrepreneurs and small business owners who listen to this show are going to enjoy hearing about your entrepreneurial journey. That's kind of what it's all about. We're all entrepreneurs. And first, let me say, I never miss Shark Tank. In fact, I started watching it a couple years ago when it was called, it was called Dungeon Dragons in Canada, I think. And some of the players were on up there. I just love entrepreneurial television. And I remember when you got the deal, I was really excited for you guys. And now as a grandfather, I know my daughter, all my kids are grown up that range from 26 to 31, so no sippy cups here. But I have a grandson now, Nathan, and you actually sort of met my daughter Jessica, who books my interviews for me. And she's a major fan of the cup, so that's pretty cool. I know that you went on a casting call and ended up waiting in line, I think I heard, for like 7 hours. Is that right? Is that how you initially got on the show?
Yes. Sort of like everything happened very fortuitously. A friend of ours had told us about the show. We had only seen a few episodes, and we're like, you know what? We're at this point in our business where we do actually need funding. We could use the exposure, so we happened to go online to abc.com and look at the details of how to get on the show. And, I mean, no joke, the casting call was the next morning, and we were online at 8 p.m. that night. We frantically that evening arranged for early morning childcare and filled out the 30-page application and showed up and, sort of made our way through the ranks.
Wow, that's incredible. That act right there really shows a lot of what I guess perseverance, which is certainly a character trait of every entrepreneur who eventually builds a successful business. My example of perseverance is my first year in business I started in 2001. My entire first 12 months was revenue free, as I call it, which means it took me a solid year to get my first client. So before I want to continue, I'm really curious about the Shark Tank and whatnot, but what was the whole audition like? What was it, because we tend to watch American Idol and things like that. Were you in a huge room and they just picked you out, or did you interview with a couple people sitting at a desk and one goes in one door and the other heads out the exit, or what was that like?
Go ahead,
Mark.
Well, everyone gets a chance. And so you do, it's kind of like a little chaotic, but it is like a snake line where you will eventually see someone. And yes, it is in a big room and they all have their individual tables and you have, anywhere between 30 seconds to 3 minutes, however long you can keep that person's attention to do your pitch. And if you move on, it depends on the contestant. Some people went home that day from there and got calls back to come or to send a tape. We were asked to go upstairs and they had someone with a camera. And so I think there's different levels of interest, but we were pretty excited to be, moving to another room and seeing other people kind of, either leaving or just kind of waiting around. So we weren't sure what was going to happen, but some of those folks that didn't get called into the room, we knew that they were still asked to be back, in the later part of the process.
Yeah, I've read all their books, and I think in Lori Grenier's book, she says she'll know within 30 seconds whether something or an idea is a hero or a zero, as she calls it. So that's kind of that 30-second rule. How did you come up with the idea for the Lala Cup for those people that didn't see your episode?
Well, I know it's a bit cliche, but really our first daughter was our inspiration. I was a stay-at-home mom at the time, and my daughter, my pediatrician was telling me at her nine-month visit, she's nearing one, you need to start thinking about weaning her off the bottle. I suggest weaning her to a straw instead of a traditional sippy cup. Apparently there are these speech and dental benefits to using straws as opposed to the little sippy spouts. And so, I went to the store the very next day. I purchased almost every toddler straw cup out there, and all of them have these spill-proof valves, which is great. They don't spill, but my daughter just could not suck hard enough to get past those valves, and it was just such a challenge. And I kept telling my husband, like, why don't they just make something that's easy for kids to use and then easy for me to clean, because these valves are so complicated. Once I took it apart to wash it, I could not figure out which one went on which cup and which straw. So, I was just telling Mark, like, I think I could really design a really cute cup that would be super functional, really easy for kids to use, easy for moms to clean. And, I was really looking for something made in the USA at the time, and there was nothing in feeding. So we sort of took all those angles and pieced them together into what is now the Lala Cup.
That is so cool how, you get an idea and inspiration, you just tackle it. Now, did you have any design background at all, or how did you start creating that, right in your home?
I don't have a design background. I actually was a high school chemistry teacher before I had kids, and so I had an idea, it's all rough sketches and in my head what I wanted, but we did find an industrial designer who's local, to sort of help us realize our vision.
That's so cool. So how old was your business? So you designed the cup, and then how did you start selling it, just locally at like mom's groups, or what were your first sales like?
Well, the first sales, Mark really, he said, look, Hannah, you're the mom. You came up with the concept. You would probably be the best sales rep at this time. So Mark was handling all the business aspects of it and getting it produced. And he said, look, I'm going to watch the kids for a week, go to New York, go out to Santa Monica, go wherever you need to go, and just try to sell this in the top stores that you want to get it into. And so that's what I did. I took a trip to New York. I went door to door just with samples in hand saying, and if they didn't want to buy it, I left the sample there for them to sort of think about it. And that's how we opened our first 50 accounts, was just showing up at the door.
That's so cool. You know, Auntie Anne's Pretzels is pretty well known now, but I was around in this very close by where I live in Pennsylvania. They started franchising about the same time I did, and one of the things they did was when they opened a new outlet, you know, of course, the smell of buttery cinnamon and pretzels wafting, people would come over and they would give them away for free for like 1 to 3 days when they opened. And of course, you get people hooked on it and then they want more. So, you know, I like what you said about just, you know, leaving some and letting people try it. There's a lot to be said for having people try it and experience it, you know, other than just visiting a website.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, and also to add to this, like I've launched a small business before, and there is a huge value to having the actual creator of the item meeting with the owner of the boutique. And look, these boutiques get solicited every day. That's the truth. But if you're persistent enough, passionate enough, and you're showing, like, look, I came from all the way from California to be with you, to spend the 5 minutes of my time, please just hear me out. I mean, there's just a big impact, especially when you're beginning. That I think that a lot of startups want to hope that you can just find a rep or just go to a trade show and it'll happen right away. But there's a lot of dirty work, a lot of groundwork, that grassroots work that you have to do to get off the floor.
Absolutely. You know, somebody else that I had corresponded with was Kirsten Hathcock from Mod Mom Furniture. Do you remember her? She was
a stay-at-home mom.
She is quite an inspiration in everything that she's done with her nonprofit and things like that. Mark, what were you doing? Because you're with the business now, right? But you had a job outside the home, I guess, when this whole sippy cup thing became a reality, right?
Yes, I actually was in business school when she first kind of started thinking of the idea. And so I told her, look, you know, while I wrap up here, and I also had a T-shirt brand business, and I told her, if you get a prototype together and you're ready to go to market and you're happy with your product, I'll jump in right before market launch and I'll help you get it off the floor. And so that was kind of our arrangement. The timing kind of worked out good because I was in school. And so it was a pretty easy transition. However, you know, it is really daunting and scary when, you know, like you said, you don't have the income in 12 months and whatnot.
Yeah. Did you experience that too, or were you referring to my episode there?
Oh no, we yes. There were many, many nights, stressful nights, kind of saying, how are we gonna survive? And it's not, I mean, it's been for a few years now and things are starting to look on the up now, which is great, but it's terrifying not getting any income and sacrificing so much. But it's also part of the process, I guess, if you're starting from scratch.
It really is. And, you know, I remember for quite a few years, I mean, literally up to 3 or 4 years as I started growing, you know, I run a live event called Dream Business Academy, where I teach new entrepreneurs. And I tell this story how, you know, business was so slow on bill paying Fridays when, you know, I'd pay a part-time worker, pay your taxes, your rent, your light bill, whatever, and then there's nothing left for the owner, the person who started and founded the business. And I'm like, good Lord, there's nothing left. Everybody got paid but me. You know, and I really, that's where an entrepreneur earns their stripes, you know? I mean, it's really what makes it rewarding. So business school, man, how fortuitous that you've really got a lot of training now that you have a growing business.
Yeah, you know, I really enjoyed my time at business school, and I often get asked, is it necessary to succeed? And, you know, my answer is absolutely not. You don't need it, but it is a great place to meet a ton of people, to practice. I mean, I really attribute our pitch, our success with our pitch in Shark Tank, from all the times that, you know, we got kicked in the face at school, doing a presentation and not being perfectly prepared or not being able to anticipate questions that might come our way. I mean, it's really hard to get that kind of practice in a setting where there's something at stake. You know, we were often pitching in front of very successful VCs that, who knows, we might meet down the line, so we want to make a good impression. And so there's a lot of nerve-wracking moments there. And I felt that when Shark Tank came around, I think I was a little bit more prepared and had the right mindset to not be so nervous and to be as prepared as possible. So, yeah, it was actually, the timing, again, worked out perfectly for us.
You know, what's interesting is I think, because I had some business school also, but it's so different when you're a bootstrapping entrepreneur compared to the book learning part of that, right? And so literally about a half an hour ago, I was coaching with a fairly new entrepreneur, and I think they've got a very much needed service that they want to launch. But I was like, what's going on? How come you're not launching? And there's this minor little tweak. So I tweaked it and said, okay, that's fixed. And they were still resisting. I said, listen, this is a needed service. Stop fighting it, launch it, and have success with it. And really, about a half, you know, about so they said, okay, kind of everybody needs a push, you know. And right. They said, what happens if it doesn't work? And I said, if it doesn't work, then you move on. I said, you still got your family and you got other clients and you just go on and do something else. I mean, I really think fear of failure holds so many people back. Hannah, did you ever have a fear of failure when you were launching this, or how much how much did you put on the line, so to speak, to get your sippy cup going?
You know, fear of failure there. However, I think Mark was, I don't know if it's because he had been involved in a previous business where he was like, you know what, we need to get to a point where we're so convinced that we can sell this and do this. And at that point, that's when we're both going to do this full time. And so we were ready to commit, and we believed in it so much that once we sort of made that decision, like, okay, this is going to be our full-time job, our health, our children, our livelihood is on the line, there was really no room to sit there and be fearful of failure. In terms of how much we put on the line, you know, it was just scraping by. We got a small business loan. We put our first little townhouse that we bought when we got married on as collateral. So our home was on the line for this business. You know, we cashed out every penny of savings, every IRA we had, it's all in this business. So I want to say we started with about $100,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's something. You know, when I did start my business, we still had four teenagers at home, and my wife had been a stay-at-home mom all those years. She did go back to work because I had a hard time finding work before I started my business. And there was one point where, and I don't even think she told me this, she told me this much later, but there was one week she went to the grocery store with $60 for a week for groceries for six people. And it's like, man, you really learn what you can do when you're in that situation. And, you know, so when I'm working with new entrepreneurs and I see the struggle, and I'm like, I want to help them, but I'm also, this is part of it, man. This is where you're getting your mettle tested, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. And you know what's funny is in the beginning, Mark and I mean, penny pinching was literally a term because we, you know, it was our first trade show. We're like, you know, we want to make a bang. We want everything to, like, be perfect. And so we, you know how people give away little tchotchkes at trade shows. And so we thought, what about doing these little one-inch buttons? I mean, we sat there in our living room cutting out and making these, like pressing these one-inch buttons, and we made 1,000. And, you know, they were a huge hit. Everyone was wearing them. These big brands were wearing our little buttons on their badge and on our first trade show. And it was, you know, just those little things that you save. We maybe saved $200 by doing that, but it was $200 that we could put towards something bigger.
Absolutely. So was the Shark Tank appearance, was that literally the turning point? Were there many turning points in your business, or was that like kind of releasing the dam, so to speak?
I think there are many turning points. I'd like to think that we would still be standing and still succeeding had it not been for Shark Tank. But I will say that there's no way we would have had that same acceleration without Shark Tank. We're still having turning points today, and we're always looking for the next one. I feel like we do have legitimacy. We do have a little bit of a stamp in our market, in our industry, but we know we have a very, very long way to go. So I always look at it as there's no ever end all be all, or this is the one moment that's going to make or break us. Those kind of things are every day. And so I know that sounds a little bit, you know, cheesy, but I feel when I study other businesses or brands, it seems like whenever people rest on their laurels or kind of feel like, oh, we've made it, that's when you kind of start getting into trouble. And we're trying to avoid that trouble that I had with my first business. So, yeah.
Absolutely. You know, I really like Robert and I like Mark although the faces he makes on camera are hysterical, but he's really very astute, you know, as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Are those guys really available to you, or how does that work when they make an investment? Is it really kind of off, you know, kind of hands off a little bit, or what's that look like?
They are very available. I mean, more than we ever imagined. And in fact, they're always responsive to any emails we send, responsive within, 6 hours, I want to say. And considering their busy schedules, that's pretty responsive. The funny thing is, like, for example, we always tell this story because we just find it so shocking. Mark Cuban, after we aired, he sent us an email probably Saturday night at 10 p.m. Pacific time, and he said, Hannah, start a blog. And that was it. and I thought, okay, well, if Mark Cuban's telling me to start a blog at Saturday at 10 p.m., I better start that blog. And that's kind of, if you think about how much he's doing, it's just incredible that his reachability, availability, the fact that he even thinks about our little business is quite flattering.
That's awesome. You know what the hidden secret is for most successful entrepreneurs is that they work like crazy. You know, a lot of people in their public persona will say, "Oh, we've got the big lifestyle going," and you know, I know his image is coming off his private jet and stuff. But you know, you'll find him working. I mean, there are days I'm up at like 3:30 in the morning, and I'm almost afraid to send an email because I don't want people going, "Oh my God, Jim's working at 3:30 in the morning." And then I'll send one to someone on my team, and that person will respond. You know, it's like, man, people
right. In this
entrepreneurial world, we work a lot. It's not quite 24/7, but you know, it's hard to turn that part of your brain off. Well, first of all, because it's enjoyable, you know, when you're building a business.
Right. Well, Hannah and I, in that regard, Hannah and I made a little pact that if ever Mark or Robert were to reach out to us, we'd drop everything and meet and respond. And she's not kidding. We've gone on a long, holiday long weekend, Saturday night. 11:30 p.m. He emails us. I wake her up. We get out of bed. We talk about it. We draft an email back. We go back and forth till 3:30 in the morning, and finally we have the last say because we don't want to be outworked by the billionaire. And then 6 o'clock in the morning, he's right back at it, emailing us. And you know, it's not just hey, do this, do that. There are things that even he's learning. I mean, he's saying, oh, so how's your experience with your ad campaign on Amazon? Things like that. And I'm just completely floored at how intense, how tenacious he is. And it's really been an inspiration, at least for me, to kind of witness it and to see this guy has what you would consider everything, but he still is working so hard. And so it's been really, really great for our business.
You know, Dick Clark, who, I think it's like 3 or 4 years ago now since he passed. But, you know, the TV host, he has tons of businesses. One time I was reading an interview with him and someone said, how do you explain all the success and all the multiple businesses? And he goes, I made a deal with myself that I would never be out-hustled by anybody. And I thought, man, we need more of that kind of mentality, especially these days in this country where people, I think they're kind of looking for the easy way out in too many circles. But it really is all about putting in the hard work and the effort and making your dreams come true. It's not easy or everybody would be doing it.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. There's been so many times where it just felt, wow, this is a lot, but, I mean, it's what we dreamed of. I mean, ever since Shark Tank, we've never been more busy in our lives. And I think the kind of misconception is that, oh, I'll go on Shark Tank and then it'll just blow up and I'll sit back and watch it and ride the wave and become an instant millionaire. And it couldn't be more farther from the truth. Once the lights turn on you, it's time to go. And, you know, you're the one that's going to have to do the legwork and all the hard work to kind of keep it afloat. So,
it's what
we expected, but there was no disappointment.
Yeah. You know, I'm almost laughing because when you said that, I'm thinking of there was a guy on Shark Tank. I don't remember his name, and I wouldn't name him if I could, but he said, somebody said, what are you going to do with the money? He says, I just want to live the California lifestyle. All I need is $100,000 a year. He walked out of there without a deal.
yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah. I want to ask you another question about the process, but since we're talking so much about how hard it is to grow a business and how much work it is, how have you balanced your family life? I mean, for a while, I guess you're working in your garage in your living room. Is that still the case, or do you have a place now, a facility that you go to, or?
Yeah, I am so grateful that our company is now out of our living room and garage. Our children thought cardboard boxes were their play toys for the longest time. But we do finally have a warehouse and office. We've finally grown enough to have that space. The way we balance it all is, thankfully we have so much family to support us. I'm now full-time at the office, and my mother-in-law watches our one-year-old, our other two are in school. We try to really focus on our kids. They go in the afternoons, they go to bed probably around 7:30, and then it's back to work for us. So that's how we kind of balance family life and work and just make it all happen.
I think that's great. And, I must say my kids have, I think they learn a lot watching you work hard and see the reward. In fact, my daughter Jessica, who I mentioned earlier, she is a stay-at-home mom now, and she started her own business as a virtual assistant, and then doing booking interviews like she did for us and things like that. So she found a way to stay at home and be a mom. So that's really important. The one thing I remember about your episode was Mr. Wonderful challenging you on getting these made in China. And dropping a couple bucks, but you really wanted to have it made in this country. I thought that was pretty awesome. Did you find – I'm pretty sure he was the only one who challenged you on that, right? Mark actually came to your defense, I think.
Mark, do you want to answer that?
Yeah. No, yes. We had a vision for this brand, and being made in the USA for the Lala Cup was part of an important competitive advantage for us to enter the market in such a crowded space. I mean, really, there's so many cups. And we know for a fact, based on our kind of primary research, that parents were looking for that. And so that's one of the things that we weren't really willing to compromise. On the other hand, we would never say that anything made overseas is bad or not safe. It's just that also kind of comfort from having it here, as well as, doing the U.S. economy a favor by producing here. It was really a never-say-never thing. We didn't say, no, we'd never make in China. We just said, listen, this is just our vision right now, and this is what we need for our brand to really make a place. And so, thankfully, the other sharks really saw that. But I do see the value in what Kevin was trying to say, and I would never say you're wrong, because that's what's so great about Shark Tank in business, is that there is no 100% right or wrong. I mean, who knows what would have happened to our brand or company if we went that direction, but we're happy with the way everything unfolded from the time that we are to here. So.
Awesome. We have about 3 or 4 minutes left, and I want to ask you about give you a chance to talk about your product and where people can get it, and then ask you, I know you're doing – you're developing some other programs. Do you want to talk about that real quick?
Sure. You can buy our products. I mean, thankfully we're in quite a bit of stores now, about 600 specialty boutiques across the U.S. We have a page on our website that you can find them all. We have a good presence on Amazon and diapers.com. There's always our website as well, lalaland.com. where you can find out frequently asked questions and just more details about the products. We just recently launched a mealtime set, which just is a great complement to the Lala Cup. It's a really simple, modern, extremely durable plate set that includes a plate, a bowl, and a little dipping cup. And the story behind that one is one of my daughters is just it's beside herself if her ketchup is touching her food or her syrup kind of spilled onto her hash brown and she's freaking out. So we created this little dipping cup where it just holds all the little condiments. It's a small size, you can control the portion size, and your kids can dip. And so far it's been a big hit with parents who have used it. So we're hoping that from there we have a few other things coming out, but if I disclose them, I probably have to.
Okay, yeah, I don't want you to do that.
Yeah.
So the website is LaLaLand. It's LOLLALand.com, and that's where they can learn all about you and your programs. And you know, the other thing I noticed on there is that the Lala cup is 100% recyclable. So that's a good thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, that's awesome. You know, I encourage you to keep coming up with kind of what's next. The what's next is always important in a business, and because you kind of never know what's going to go on. It seems like the sippy cup nobody's going to stop having babies, so it seems like it will have a life of its own. But you know, you never know. There could be something better come along. So it's always good to have your eyes down the road about what's next with a business. So I'm happy to see that for you guys. Well, it's been a real – go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to say, Hannah has – when I hear about Hannah's pipeline and what she has in store, obviously we are – you know, bootstrapping, we're a small business, and if we had limited funds, we'd love to launch all at once, but that's also a danger in itself. But when I hear about some of the things that are kind of turning in our head, and we have a little shared notepad for ideas that we might have down the line, oh, man, I'm so excited. I'm really excited for where this is headed and where hopefully we can just bring out her vision in products. So, yeah.
Well, that's awesome. Hey, so I know, you know, you come up with ideas all these different places. So one idea that I've shared this with a bunch of people. So at first I thought it was weird, but I'm not unique. I get so many ideas in the shower. So there's actually a thing called Aquanotes. It's a little pad because I could never remember my idea by the time I got dried off and dressed and go to my office. So it's this little thing called Aquanotes. So you can actually, it's like waterproof paper. You little pencil, you write it and you toss it outside the door. And anyway, I don't know why that popped into my head, but hopefully
you can write it on your bathroom glass.
It's a little pad. It's, I think it's about 3 by 4 inches, and it's got suction cups on the back, so it you know, just stays there on your shower wall or your bathtub wall. And there's a little pencil with a suction cup holder. So if you get an idea, the paper's waterproof paper, and so you just write it with a pencil.
Gosh.
It's the coolest thing. So, well, good. I'm glad I shared
that
something.
That is so awesome.
Google Aquanotes. There you go. All right. Well, listen, it's been so fun connecting with you guys and learning about your journey. I know this is going to be a very, very popular episode, which I think airs next week, actually. So I'll make sure Jessica lets you know about that. And thank you so much, Mark. And, Han, I want to wish you continued success with your cup and your dinner trays and things like that.
Likewise.
Thank you,
Jim,
so
again
much.
So much for having us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Hey,
thanks
folks,
again.
That wraps up. Oh, sure, Hannah. That wraps up this very special episode of Stick Like Glue Radio with Mark and Hannah Lim. Stick Like Glue Radio is the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Again, I am your host, Jim Palmer. I'm committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. Watch for another great episode of Stick Like Glue Radio this time next week. Until then, keep taking action, keep moving forward, and don't ever, ever, ever give up. Now go out there and do something nice for somebody today. Take care, everybody.
You've been listening to Stick Like Glue Radio, the only podcast dedicated to helping you create an everlasting bond with your customers so they stay longer, spend more, and refer more. Stick Like Glue Radio features Jim Palmer's unique brand of smart marketing and business building advice for action-oriented entrepreneurs. To make sure you don't miss a single profit-boosting show, subscribe to this podcast at www.getjimpalmer.com. If you know other entrepreneurs looking for the fastest way to higher profits in their business, please tell them about the Stick Like Glue Radio podcast. Now go and implement what you've learned and boost your profits. See you next week for more Stick Like Glue Radio.